Before we get into our lesson tonight, I wanted to ask you a question. How many of you are familiar with the Ethiopian eunuch? Anybody ever heard of him? Wow, a lot of people have. And I bet you probably even know what chapter of the Bible he's in, or at least for sure what book he's in. What book of the Bible is he in? Acts. What chapter?
Eight.
Okay, we're not going to talk about him tonight. Just wanted to make sure you knew who he was. Because tonight we're going to talk about the Ethiopian eunuch of the Old Testament. Are you familiar with him? He's a little less known. We'll read about him in Jeremiah chapter 38. Before we get into that, we want to do a little bit of background from Jeremiah 37 so we see where we are. In Jeremiah 37, Jerusalem is being sieged by the Babylonians. Verse 5, we can read about that, and we can see King Nebuchadnezzar has sent his army down there, and they're going to capture Judah. It's kind of been coming for a while. God's been prophesying it for quite some time that this is going to happen. But now, there they are. The army's got them surrounded. But then also in verse 5, Egypt is coming to help. And so Babylon hears that Egypt is coming. They decide, well, we're going to back off a little bit. And so they leave. Well, of course, this gives all of the people of Jerusalem the idea that, oh, well, it was a threat, but now it's over, and everything's fine. God's not really going to punish us. Nothing bad's really going to happen to us, and so on and so forth. Jeremiah has done some strange things in his prophesying, as a lot of the Bible prophets have. Not as strange as some of them, but stranger than others. But one of the things he did was he put a yoke on him, a wooden yoke, and he was showing that they were going to be in bondage to Babylon. Well, one of the false prophets comes along and he gets that yoke off and he breaks it in half. And he says, well, see, the Lord's told me, well, we're not going to go into Babylonian captivity. That's not going to happen. God's breaking the yoke of the Babylonians. Jeremiah says, well, I'll tell you what, I'd be glad if you were right. But you're not. You're lying. And he said, you're going to know that when you go and kill yourself, basically. But he says, for now, I just want you to know that based on what you've said, God has decided that instead of wooden yokes, there are going to be yokes of iron. It's going to be iron bondage that we're going to be in. And so Jeremiah has been saying these kinds of things, and he's been talking about this Babylonian captivity that's coming. He's even prophesied that it's going to be 70 years in captivity. So you can guess that he's not the most popular guy in town. I mean, think for a minute, as Americans, how we would feel if there was a prophet that was saying, you know, we're going to be in bondage to the Chinese, or to the Iranians, or to the Russians, or to anybody else, for that matter. Oh, we're going to be invited. They're going to come and they're going to capture us and they're going to burn Washington, D.C. and destroy it and they're going to take us captive and we're going to have to serve under them for 70 years. Does that sound like, I mean, presidential season's coming up. You suppose a presidential candidate that, with that kind of a philosophy and a platform would get a lot of votes? Probably not. See, this is the kind of thing that Jeremiah is saying. Now, Jeremiah, of course, is saying it because that's what the Lord's telling him. He's prophesying what God's telling him to prophesy. And so when Babylon leaves, after they've been there, everybody's, yay, they're gone. Egypt came up, they ran them off. Everything's good. Jeremiah was a liar after all. But Jeremiah, in verses 7 through 10, says, oh, no, 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 no. They left. But they're coming back and they're going to destroy Jerusalem. And when he says those kinds of things, when he says there's not going to be any way that we're going to defeat them. Verse 10 he says, even if you should defeat the whole army of Chaldeans who are fighting against you and there remained of them only wounded men, every man in his tent, they would rise up and burn this city with fire. Well, Jeremiah then, in verses 11 through 16, when the Chaldeans leave, Jeremiah goes to go out to his land in Benjamin, to claim his land in the area of Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin. And when he goes, they grab him and they say, oh, he's trying to escape and go over to the Babylonians. He's going to join our enemies. And so they capture him and they arrest him. And they charge him with treason. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? Getting charged with treason is a wonderful thing, I'm sure. Well, King Zedekiah hears the arguments. And basically, he listens to what Jeremiah says. He listens to what they're saying. They said, yeah, you're deserting to the Chaldeans. Jeremiah said, that's a lie. I'm not deserting to the Chaldeans. They wouldn't listen to him. They bring him before the king. The king listens to him. Says, well, is there any word from the Lord? Jeremiah says, yes, there is. You're going to be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon. Can you imagine a prophet telling President Trump that? Oh, you're going to be taken captive by one of the other leaders of the world, and they're going to capture you and take you prisoner. You think that would go over real well? Well, it didn't go over real well with this king either. So King Zedekiah tells them, do whatever you want to do with them. Go, you know, do whatever. Arrest him, put him in prison, whatever you want to do with him. So they do. In fact, they take him and they throw him down into a well, a dried up well, but a well nonetheless. And they leave him there. They leave him there to starve to death and to die. And then in chapter 38, verses 7 through 13, we meet Ebed-Melech. There should be a space between that H and I there. Not Melechin, it's Melech, in Jeremiah 38, verses 7 to 13. And this is the Ethiopian eunuch of the Old Testament. He's a nobody. He's just a servant. He himself is a slave in the king's household of a king who's about to become a slave himself. That's how low on the totem pole this guy is. But we get to meet him here. Let's read about what happens. Start in verse 6. They took Jeremiah, they cast him into the cistern of Malchiah, the king's son, which was in the court of the guard. They let Jeremiah down by ropes, and there was no water in the cistern, but only mud. And Jeremiah sank in the mud. When Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, a eunuch who was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah into the cistern, the king was sitting in the Benjamin gate. Ebed-Melech went from the king's house and said to the king, my lord the king, these men have done evil in all that they did to Jeremiah the prophet by casting him into the cistern, and he will... Pardon me. He will die there of hunger, for there is no bread left in the city. Well, even if there was bread in the city, he wouldn't be able to get it down there in that well, would he? Unless somebody brings it to him. Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian. And he said, take 30 men with you from here and lift Jeremiah the prophet out of the cistern before he dies. So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went to the house of the king to a wardrobe in the storehouse and took from there old rags and worn-out clothes, which he let down to Jeremiah in the cistern by ropes. Then Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, said to Jeremiah, put the rags and clothes between your armpits and the ropes. And Jeremiah did so. And then they drew Jeremiah up with ropes and lifted him out of the cistern. But Jeremiah remained in the court of the guard. And so Jeremiah didn't just get freed, but he did get out of this pit. He's still imprisoned, but at least he's not in this pit. So let us to think about some things as we observe Ebed-Melech and what he does here, and we're going to learn some things from him because he's a good example for us. Just like the Ethiopian eunuch of the New Testament is a good example for us in some different ways. So first, let's learn courage. The king had told them to do whatever with Jeremiah. He had okayed Jeremiah's imprisonment and his punishment. So for Ebed-Melech to come to the king and talk to the king, this was a pretty bold move for a servant to come and do that. And yet he does. He has this courage because he knows what needs to be done. I'm sure he probably had some fear. He's probably afraid of what might happen to him. But it didn't stop him from doing what he knew needed to be done. So we learn courage from him here in verse 8. He went from the king's house and went to talk to the king. We learn from places like Esther that when there was a king, you didn't just march in. You know, Esther was afraid when she went before the king that if the king didn't... Now this was a different kingdom and a few different rules, but in that kingdom, if the king didn't hold his scepter out to you if you just came marching in uninvited, you'd be executed right there on the spot. Now, this Ebed-Melech was not a high-ranking official. He certainly wasn't a relative of the king or anything like that to have some kind of special standing to be able to just walk into the king and start talking to him. So it took a good bit of courage for him to come up and talk to the very king who had put Jeremiah in this position in the first place. So we see his courage there. But we also learn as we watch him about kindness. Notice verses 11 and 12. I mean, we may do good deeds. And for what Ebed-Melech did just to get Jeremiah out of that pit, that was good. But he went the extra mile, so to speak. Because look at what he does. He goes and he gets some clothes, some worn out clothes and rags, yes. But he gets those soft things for Jeremiah to put between the ropes and his body. So that the rope doesn't give him rope burn. So it doesn't hurt. Look how gentle he's being. How kind. He didn't have to go that. He could have just thrown the rope down there and said, here, tie this around your waist and we'll drag you up. And they could have bounced him off the walls and everything else on the way up. Still would have got him out of the pit. Still would have saved his life. But he doesn't do that. He instead goes beyond. He actually helps make it a comfortable situation for Jeremiah. That's kindness. That's something that went beyond what was expected or what could be expected. God calls on us to show kindness. Calls on us to find ways to make things better for those around us. Not just doing the bare minimum that needs to be done, but going that extra mile. Doing the extra work to make sure that when we're helping somebody, we're helping them the best way possible. To live that golden rule that Jesus taught. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And that's what Ebed-Melech does. He puts himself in Jeremiah. If I was down there in that pit, what would I want them to do for me? And boy, that rope's rough. That'd hurt. So I'd want something to cushion me. And by this time, too, you know, Jeremiah's not a young man anymore either. He's not in the best of health. He's been thrown down there. I mean, this eunuch is afraid that he's going to starve to death, so he's obviously not in great condition, and so he does everything he can to help the situation. The third thing we learn when we observe Ebed-Melech is the difference in right and wrong. He is not afraid, in verse 9, to say to the king, what these men have done is evil. We live in a society today where more and more things have moved off of the evil list into the, well, it's not what I would do, but if somebody else wants to, that's okay list. Unfortunately for most folks, those things haven't moved off God's evil list. They've just moved off our society's evil list. Ebed-Melech recognizes throwing somebody down into a pit, not giving them any food or any water, and leaving them down there to die is evil. And he is able to say so. He's not afraid to say so. It's harder and harder in our society today for us to stand up and say, you know what? These actions are evil actions. What these people are doing is evil. It's wrong. It's sinful. It's bad. And I look out and I see some of these young people here and I think, how much harder is it going to be in another 20 or 30 years for them? When they're my age. Or in another 50 or 60 years when, you know, they're leaders in the church, elders and elders' wives, and they've got grandchildren of their own. Don't think too much about that. You don't want to think about having grandchildren yet. But you know, when they get to that point, how different is it going to be by then? How hard is it going to be for the church to stand up? We've already got one presidential candidate who has boldly proclaimed that if he gets to be president, he's going to make sure any church that doesn't believe in the gay, lesbian, transsexual, bisexual questioning and everything else, if they don't believe in that and they don't okay that, they'll pull away their tax-exempt status. Now, it's, you know, whether he'd have the power to do that or not, it's a whole different issue. But the fact that he's boldly stating that, churches are going to have to make up their minds at some point. Probably in these children's lifetime, these teenagers and young adults, they're going to face those things. Even if some of us older folks, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. But it's going to happen. It's going to come. Cliff prayed in his prayer that we might always live in a land where we have the freedom to worship God and to be able to do these things. But it's not headed in that direction right now. It's headed the other way. If we don't turn it around, it's going to wind up in a situation where people can't say and do what they believe is right. And in that circumstance, are we going to have people like Ebed-Melech who will stand up and say, hey, this is evil. Treating somebody like this is wrong. We can't treat somebody in that kind of way. The fourth thing that we learn from him is compassion. He felt sorry for Jeremiah. He heard about what had happened. He knew what was going on with Jeremiah. And he felt for Jeremiah. He did not just ignore it. You know, sometimes we hear about situations and we think, well, that doesn't affect me, so you know, let somebody else worry about that. That's not my job. That's above my pay grade. I'm not cut out for that. And Ebed-Melech, very easily, he could have said, well, you know, I'm just a slave myself. You know, who am I to try to fix anything or do anything or care? I mean, we look at what was his situation. He's from Ethiopia. You can see on the map here. It's a long way from Ethiopia to Jerusalem. I don't know how he got up there. He winds up as a slave from Ethiopia up in Jerusalem. And we hear this word all the time as we talk about the Ethiopian eunuch. How do you explain that gently for our ears, for our young folks especially? He was a man who's not a man anymore. For those of you who are involved with animal husbandry, cattle and things like that, the thing that makes a bull not a bull anymore, but a steer. That's what had happened to this guy. He wasn't a man anymore. They had taken away what made him a man and turned him into a slave. Now, he could have very easily said, well, Jeremiah's having a rough time, but what about me? Poor old me. Look what they did to me. He could have looked at himself and felt self-pity, had a little pity party for himself, and said, well, nobody helped me when I was captured and enslaved and all these things happened to me. Nobody cared about me, so why should I care about anybody else? He could easily have had that kind of an attitude. But he didn't. He had an attitude of compassion toward someone else who was suffering. And we need to learn that lesson from him as well. The fifth thing we need to learn is the importance of actions. Yes, he had the compassion. Yes, he felt for what Jeremiah was going through. Maybe realize, I went through a hard time and this poor guy, he's going through a hard time too. Maybe he sympathized with him and empathized with him. But we see the importance of actually acting on it. How many times in our lives have we seen somebody being mistreated, whether it was somebody just saying something mean to them, gossiping about them, saying something angrily, yelling, screaming at them, or even to the point of physically abusing this person, and felt compassion, felt sorry for them, known it was wrong, and turned our head and walked by looking the other way because we didn't want to get involved. Probably we've done that more often than we'd like to admit. But we see the importance of actions. The actions, and I have here verse 7 for some reason, it should be verses 6 and 10. In verse 6, we see the actions of the men that threw him into that pit. Now they could say, oh, we were just doing, King said, do whatever, and so we just threw him in that pit, and it's not our problem anymore. And even though he's going to starve to death or die of thirst or whatever down there, well, it's not our fault. I mean, we put him in there, but whatever happens to him after that's not our problem. But oh yes, the importance of their actions. Those evil actions that they took. God was going to judge them for that. Ebed-Melech told the king, they've done evil to Jeremiah. And he was right. They had abused Jeremiah. They had harmed him. They had hurt him. And if he died of starvation, they would be responsible for his death, for putting him down there where he could not get to food. But then on the other side, we see verse 10. Ebed-Melech was brave enough to go talk to the king. And that small action of actually going and talking to the king about what was happening, the king told him, take 30 men and go get him out of that pit. That first little step, going and talking to somebody about the problem. Ebed-Melech didn't have the power to change it by himself. He was just a slave. He couldn't do anything. But he knew who could. So he went and talked to the king. There are going to be times in our lives where we're in a situation where we see something evil going on and it may not be something that we can stop by ourselves. But we need to do what we can to do something about it. We need to talk to the people who can change it, or we need to join together with others so that our voice is stronger and bigger to be able to help in those situations. We need to think about the importance of action. Doing something. Don't just, Ebed-Melech could have just gone back to the slave quarters with the other slaves and sat around talking about, well, that's really bad what they did to Jeremiah. Isn't that terrible? Oh, that's terrible. Oh, wow, it's awful. Let me post on Facebook about how awful it was what they did to Jeremiah. I know they didn't have Facebook back then. Let's talk about it. But actions speak louder than words. he did something about it. And his actions helped change Jeremiah's situation. Most likely saved Jeremiah's life because of what he did, because of the choices he made. And then we see the importance of doing what we can. You know, we can't do everything. We can't do it all. We can't solve all the world's problems. But there is something we can do. Ebed-Melech couldn't stop Babylon from coming back. He couldn't stop the people from keeping Jeremiah in prison even. But he could at least get him out of that pit and save his life. As we saw, Jeremiah is still in prison. But they drew Jeremiah up with the ropes and lifted him out of the well. And then Jeremiah still had to remain in the court of the guard. But he did what he could to make the situation better. We will always run up on situations that are beyond our ability to completely fix. But are we doing something? Are we doing what we can to make that situation better? Even in those situations where someone's being mistreated, we may not be in a situation where we can stop that mistreatment. But we can be a friend. We can be there for moral support. We can be there to stand with that person. There are a lot of situations like that. But we can't do it all. But we can do something. So what would you have done? Would you have had the compassion? Would you have cared? Oh, some guy, yeah, some prophet's in the pit. Yeah, it's not my problem. Or would you have cared enough to go talk to the king about it? To try to fix the problem? Would you ignore it? Would you stand up to a king? Will you stand up to government? You know, right now in China, there are people trying in Hong Kong to... they want to be able to have freedom. They've kind of been used to it under British rule. And then when Britain gave Hong Kong back to China, now they're finding they're losing that freedom. And they want that freedom. They want to keep it. They're speaking up. And it's a risk. What would you stand up for? At the risk of your job? At the risk of your life? I mean, Ebed-Melech goes to the king and says, "Well, your buddies here were really evil. They threw Jeremiah in that pit, and he's going to starve to death down there." And you know, the king could have very easily said, "Hey guys, throw him in there with him." He could have done that. Very real possibility. I mean, these kings weren't good kings. There's a reason Judah was falling. Because the kings were horrible. Josiah was a good king, but all of his sons and his brother and all the others that came after him, they weren't good. Would you stand up to the government at the risk of your life, the risk of your job, at the risk of a loss of income or status? Jeremiah stood up to the point that they called him a traitor. They accused him of treason because of what he had to say. Will you stand up for Jesus? Will you call good good and call evil evil? Will you be concerned when you see evil being done? Will you speak out about those concerns to the person or persons who can help? Will you act on your concerns? And will you do what you can, even though you can't do everything? And none of us can fix all the world's problems alone. But if we all work together, we can make this world a better place. We can make the church a better church. We can make our families better families. We can make our towns better towns. Make the schools better schools. You can make wherever you are, your workplace, a better workplace. Things can be better if we'll live like God calls us to live. Ironic, isn't it? Here's this guy. He's not even one of God's children. He's an Ethiopian. He's a foreigner. And he's living like God says you should live, better than the people that are supposed to be the leaders of God's people. Better than the kings and the princes. He's living right. We need to be that example. We need to learn from him. Will you stand up for Jesus? Why not now, as together we stand and sing the invitation song?